Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And as the first Black CEO of the Columbus Metropolitan Club, I think it's incredibly important for me to make sure that I'm representing all of the identities that I'm incredibly passionate about. My lens of being a woman, my lens of being a Black woman, my lens of being an immigrant, especially being here in Columbus. Columbus is such a diverse community. I want to make sure that issues that are critical to women, to Black people, to, you know, immigrants, that all of those stories are really amplified in a meaningful way.
Welcome to Then What Happened from the Columbus Dispatch. The Cap City is booming with innovative, inspiring, and passionate people with intriguing stories to tell. I'm Amelia Robinson, and I'm here to dive into what makes Columbus and its people fascinating. Hey, friends, I hope you're living your best life. I'm sure trying. The voice you just heard a little bit ago belongs to Columbus's Sophia Fiffner. I spoke with Sophia a few days after she took the very, very heavy baton from Jane Scott, the longtime CEO of the much-cherished Columbus Metro Club. As you'll hear, Sophia has some exciting plans for the organization's next chapter as it works to be more impactful and more inclusive. But this episode is not only about CMC. Sophia and I talk about rhinestones, sequins, and crowns, the importance of listening to people you don't think you have anything in common with, how super cool her sister is. I think she's pretty super cool too. Being the daughter of immigrants and how her dad went from dropping out of school and working a job lifting cinder blocks to earning his master's degree. The Then What Happened podcast is a product of the Columbus Dispatch and part of our conversations section. Like and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your favorite shows. Now here is my talk with Sophia.
True crime lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello. Plus, better-known cases like the death of Jane Bishara and Illinois' own Lori Dann. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
So literally, hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the new job.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
It has been, what, 1 week?
It's been officially 9 days. 9 blissful, wonderful, joyful, cheerful, amazing days.
That's cool. So why did you want this job in the first place? You know, obviously CMC dates back to 1976. You know, we see it at every different forum. Yeah. Why did you want to be the leader?
Yeah, you know, a couple of reasons. One is I am incredibly passionate about Central Ohio and Central Ohio communities. And that includes all communities, Columbus neighborhoods, our suburbs, what's happening in our downtown core. I am the biggest ambassador and cheerleader for everything that's happening here in Central Ohio. The second reason is I'm incredibly passionate about civic engagement and helping individuals connect to issues that matter most to them in a meaningful way. And the opportunity to serve as the president of an organization that does exactly that every single week was a dream come true. Like, quite frankly, I hosted conversations similar to the CMC for nearly 4 years in my living room because I just like to have a space where people can gather and chat. And to do this every single day as the president, it was an easy yes. And when can I start?
So what is it about CMC that you think is so special?
I love the history of the CMC, but specifically, I love how the organization founded. Our founding story is really inspiring to me. I'm incredibly passionate about gender equity and making sure that all voices have a seat at the table and have space to grow and to amplify. I love that there were 13 women who were excluded from conversations here in Columbus and said, you know what, this is ridiculous. We're gonna form our own club. And decided to form a club, not just for them, but for every member of Central Ohio to come together to talk about issues that matter, because information should not be limited to a specific class or a specific group. They wanted to make sure that it was accessible to everyone. I love that. Mm-hmm. And then more importantly, I love that they hosted and made space for some really challenging or sometimes provocative conversations, you know, especially when we look back at the history, you know, from 1976 all the way to now. We've had speakers who have become presidents of the United States, who are senators, who are individuals who have been really influential in key movements. And to have a space like that here in our backyard is pretty amazing.
You see, you talked about that history a little bit. I don't think people understand why they started. I actually just found out a little bit deeper into that background. Can you talk about that a little bit? The fact that they literally could not go to the men's clubs.
Yeah, they were excluded. Well, one, women couldn't be members of these exclusive clubs here in Columbus, but they couldn't even get into the room. So they wanted to have a space to talk about the economic challenges that Central Ohio was facing. They wanted to have a space to talk about social and political issues or issues connected to gender or race. In a space where they could share thoughts freely and also hear from thought leaders. And so that's why they started the Columbus Metropolitan Club, because they wanted a space where all people could gather, have conversations, and talk about the things that people really want to know about.
And another thing too, you said, and this is what I like about your story, talk about like the fact that we should be talking to each other, even if we don't agree with each other. I love that you did those conversations in your home.
Yeah.
What did you learn from that whole thing?
Yeah. So to give some context to the listeners, after 2016, I really wanted to understand all of my friends, my family members, my neighbors. I wanted to understand the perspectives that they carried coming into and out of that election cycle, specifically on hot button issues. So I wanted to talk about gun control or access to more guns. I wanted to talk about climate change or abortion. I wanted to talk about all of these topics and have a safe space where I could really understand core arguments for or against whatever issue people were most interested in. And what I learned after hosting conversations in my living room for nearly 4 years, and mostly the conversation centered included women, what I learned is that we actually have a lot more in common than we have to disagree on, right? There's a lot of similarities between a mom of 5 kids who lives in London, or who's a professor at OSU, as the woman who lives in Worthington, for example, with, you know, no children and just an amazing dog. We have a lot in common. And I thought that that was really impressive, because oftentimes when we watch news, you see the loudest voices, but I don't really feel like they represent how most people think, or what most people are actually feeling or doing, or how they're actually engaging with one another in their everyday lives.
Did you get a lot of fights during those conversations, or was it always kind of...
Oh my gosh. There were like tables thrown. There's some wine thrown. I mean, it was a complete disaster. No. I would be lying if I didn't say that sometimes the conversations were contentious. You could feel the intensity in the room, especially when we were talking about issues around race or immigration, because, you know, everyone walks into a space with so many identities, right? Whether you're female, or if you're an immigrant, or if you're the daughter of immigrants, or if you're Muslim, etc. And when you talk about things that can be really personal to individuals that really impact their lives, they have really strong feelings about it. So I would expect that sometimes our conversations were a little intense. What we did, though, was we made sure that we laid some ground rules at the very beginning, that everyone has space, everyone's opinions and perspectives are valid, and that the space was to learn and to listen, not to argue.
Mm-hmm.
And so having those ground rules really helped make sure that there were no tables flipped over. No wine was thrown. And at the end of the day, you know, I remember a specific conversation about immigration. It was fascinating because for one individual, she actually had a very similar story to me, but just there's several key differences. She was an older individual. She's a part of the boomer generation. She was also born in the Bronx. Her parents are German immigrants. My parents are Jamaican immigrants. And it was interesting to hear her perspective about how immigration policy is currently impacting her everyday life versus how it's impacted my life. And I just I thought it was really fascinating. It was one of those things where you end the conversation, you go, geez, if you're watching it in the news, I feel like the news would end the conversation. Like, these people have nothing in common and perhaps they should spar some more. But at the end, I was like, wow, I really do understand her perspective and where she's coming from, given her lived experience. And I feel that she felt the same way about my lived experience as well, which was really, that's why I wanted to host the space. I wanted to have a space where we could share our experiences, share our expertise, and find out where we have some common ground.
What did you find out about her?
Well, one, I found out that we both cared greatly about our family and our history, that we both felt that immigration was incredibly important, but the solutions to it, we just come from it from a little bit of a different approach. So yeah, I would say that we found common ground in that we valued immigration, we valued the immigrant story, the policy part of it, the actual nuts and bolts of how many people should be allowed to the United States, where should they be from, we just differed on that. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with having some differences on the policy solutions and figuring out, all right, well, if this is where you are and this is where I am, how do we come towards the middle?
Right? And that's the problem. A lot of people can't figure out how to come towards the middle. It's always, I am entrenched in where I am and this is what it's right. And I can't bander or move in any way.
Yeah. And I think that she was, not just for immigration, but for all issues, I do feel that the conversations that we had, we created a space where people were willing to come to the middle, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the biggest difference, is that if you have groups of individuals who aren't even willing to listen to the other side or say, I'm going to acknowledge that both perspectives have some validity, mm-hmm. it creates some tension.
Well, believe me, I know that in my job. It's every day it's like you get emails and emails from people who just don't want to see that other people have humanity. And that's just a challenge, you know?
Yeah. And that's what I'm so excited about with the Columbus Metropolitan Club, because I feel that we have this platform where we can really showcase Columbus's humanity at every single level of our community, whether it be the business community or the folks who work in education, mm-hmm. or policy or nonprofits. All of these individuals have really key and interesting stories, and they're what make our community so special and unique. And from my perspective, are really a place that has challenges, but an amazing place to live.
And you speak about Columbus too, identity, right? We're having this conversation about identity, partly because of a board member. And I must say that I'm actually on the CMC board. I should probably tell people that up front. What is Columbus's identity in your perspective? I know we're going to have that form, but let's.
I mean, geez. So with the caveat of I am one voice, right?
Right.
You know, when I think about Columbus, I think about a place that is incredibly passionate, incredibly spirited and innovative. And I realize that those are all adjectives, and it doesn't say, you know, we're a football destination, right? That's not a tagline, but I share innovation, spirited, because in every sector that exist here in Central Ohio, I see that. And I see that in big and small ways. Big ways would be, sure, you know, the expansion of technology companies moving into the Central Ohio community, like Google and Amazon or Intel. But I also see that in really small ways. You know, I used to, in a previous role, work for the city of Columbus, where I had an opportunity to work with residents in every single Columbus neighborhood. And I always loved working with residents, hearing what they're passionate about, and then helping them accomplish whatever they're trying to accomplish. So specifically for recreation and parks, we'd have residents who wanted to acquire a new park space or get a new park sign or have a new community program. And I feel that those residents are probably the most spirited individuals here in Columbus and the most innovative, because they don't have large budgets. Mm-hmm. They don't have a big checkbook, but they're leveraging every resource they have in their community, working together to find solutions towards things that matter most to them. And I think that that's amazing. And it happens every single day.
Yeah, you do see it happen every day. And people discount that as like, oh, that's just something we do. No, it doesn't happen everywhere.
No.
These sort of out-of-the-box thinking ideas that people come up with don't happen in every city. So it's cool to see. That's a good answer. Appreciate it. So you're used to giving good answers because you're a beauty queen, right?
Yes, I have dabbled in some pageantry.
Dabbled.
I really enjoy pageantry. But what I loved about competing in pageants, for listeners, I competed in the Miss America system and the Mrs. United States system, which means nothing unless you are somebody who follows pageantry. But long story short, what I like about pageantry is that it really gave me confidence. Mm-hmm. I was, if you would have asked me as a freshman in college to give a presentation in front of a class, to walk into a room and lead a workshop of any type, I would say absolutely no. No, thank you. Happy to do the research, but there's no way I'm going to walk into a room and speak to people I do not know or to give a speech. And pageantry gave me an opportunity to really hone in on my speaking skills and my self-confidence to make friends in every room that I'm in. And I really value that. And it's been very helpful in my professional life as well.
What's the biggest title you've won?
I was Mrs. Ohio United States, which I never thought I'd compete in Mrs. pageants, but here we are.
And the difference, so Mrs. is like the before you. How does
it's
work?
So strange. It's there's a lot of pageant systems. It's just like youth sports, right? There's all these different leagues and different categories that people can participate in, or any sport really. So for Mrs. pageants, you have to be married. Mm-hmm. And for the system that I competed in, Mrs. United States, the women were representing their state from every state in the country, and they came together for a national competition. So I was Mrs. Ohio. That's I did not win Mrs. United States, though.
Well, not yet, right?
Yeah, pageants are, that's a lot of rhinestones. A lot of time. I think I've hung up my pageant heels and my pageant crown, although I do have a healthy addiction to all sequins and rhinestones.
Yeah, you know, you got to give up for sequins. Yes. You got to stop for that, right? Whatever you're doing, just look at it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you talk about identity, too. So you're a lot of different things, obviously, like all of us are. You know, daughter of immigrants, you know, Black lady, first Black lady for SCMC. What does that mean to be the first Black lady at CMC as a head? There's been other Black ladies at CMC, but the first to lead it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I wish I could say, it's super easy. It's going to be fantastic and great. But honestly, I feel an incredible amount of responsibility. You know, the CMC, we have this forum that's been around for nearly 50 years. And in our 50 years, we've hosted some really heavy conversations that are important to Central Ohio communities. We also give voice to critical issues that are really important to various pockets of Columbus and Central Ohio. And as the first Black CEO of the Columbus Metropolitan Club, I think it's incredibly important for me to make sure that I'm representing all of the identities that I'm incredibly passionate about. My lens of being a woman, my lens of being a Black woman, my lens of being an immigrant, especially being here in Columbus. Columbus is such a diverse community. I want to make sure that issues that are critical to women, to Black people, to, you know, immigrants, that all of those stories are really amplified in a meaningful way. And to do that in a way that's authentic, that is meaningful, and that carries a conversation that inspires action, that's a tall glass. I'm up for the challenge, but I feel a lot of responsibility in making sure that I do that as thoughtfully as I possibly can.
How do you think you'll do that? Because there's been some pushback from some communities that CMC has not been as inclusive as it probably should be. How do you think you'll do that?
Yeah, well, you know, what's great is I've considered myself a member of the Central Ohio community for nearly 30 years. And I feel that I've done a really good job of, just from my professional experience and my personal experience, working with individuals from diverse groups. So the first thing is, one, making myself available and making the CMC available to all people. So I want to make sure that I am listening, that I'm hearing people, and then I'm taking their feedback into consideration, but then also taking their feedback and going, all right, how are we going to make changes to make the space more inclusive, to bring more diverse members to the table, and then also to give more diverse individuals a platform to actually share their perspective. One thing that I've been thinking about, and granted, I'm 9 days in. 9 days in. But
why haven't you done it yet?
One thing that I am thinking about is this idea of thought leadership, right? So there are many organizations across the United States that hold forums to talk about issues that matter for thought leaders, whether that be the Economist and their national conferences or international conferences, or the World Economic Forum, or Forbes has several conferences that have thought leaders to talk about issues that are critical to various communities. Well, I think sometimes when we think about thought leaders, we are thinking about people who are explicitly CEOs or at the top seat. But if we look at the data around how many women or people of color are in CEO level positions, I mean, the data is incredibly depressing, to say the least. So if we're only putting thought leaders at our table, it's not going to be a very diverse panel. I really want to rethink what thought leader means, because there are people who are on the front lines who are doing work every single day, who have an incredible amount of influence and impact, that also need a platform to share their expertise and their wisdom, because they're, from my perspective, I think that their voice is one of the most important voices, because they're actually doing the work and making the change in communities. So As we're growing the CMC, I'm hoping that our definition of thought leader is one that's incredibly inclusive. And that's one of the ways that I hope we can bring more diversity to the organization and also help all individuals feel more welcome. And then the last thing I want to mention is I also feel like it's very formal. So don't be surprised if the formality of the CMC changes just slightly. I want to make sure that people can come in as they are, whoever mm-hmm. they are. So if you're an individual who loves rhinestones and wants to wear an evening gown to
and
every
who
event,
doesn't?
I mean, exactly. Please come to our forums in your evening gown. I will love it. I will high five you and support you. If you're like, I'm just going to roll out of my beds and I'm wearing my SpongeBob pants. Cool. You know, come as you are. I want people to feel really comfortable to show up as their authentic selves and be in a space that's truly reflective of how Columbus, Ohio residents and Central Ohio residents live and interact every single day.
So what do your parents think of what you're doing?
I think that they're incredibly proud and excited and incredibly supportive. And I'm very thankful for their support. It means a lot to me. You know, I think a lot of first generation Americans who have parents who are immigrants, consistently the feedback that I hear and what I also feel is you just want to make your parents proud. You know, they made so many sacrifices for my education, for my safety, for my well-being, that I wake up every day thinking about how do I pay it forward and make sure that I am being the best person I can possibly be, knowing all of the things that they've had to go through to get me to where I am today. So they're proud.
Why'd they come here?
You know, they wanted a better life. So both my parents are from Jamaica, and my dad dropped out of school when he was in seventh grade so he could support his family. He had 15 brothers and sisters. Wow. So he was, you know, lifting cinder blocks while other kids were going to school. My mom lived in a very small community and also wanted access to better education. So eventually, both sides of my family ended up in the Bronx, in the South Bronx. And my dad wasn't in school, actually. My mom met him at an auto body shop where he was working. He was like, why aren't you in school? And so my dad went back and got his GED eventually and ended up getting his high school degree and then his master's. But they worked really hard to get to where they are. My mom's a nurse. She's been a nurse for 30 years. But yeah, they wanted to come here for better economic opportunities, better education, and for a safer life.
Are you the only kid or are there more?
I have a sister. Her name is Shauna Davis. She's amazing. I'm going to give her a plug because she's often in Catco performances. She is an actress and she's just an incredibly wonderful, bright human being and a much cooler person than me.
So you're also a mom, right? I'm sure she's not cooler. First of all, I'm sure she's not cooler.
No, she's cooler.
She's cooler than you.
She's definitely, like, the whole family knows it.
She's the coolest one in the family.
She's definitely far cooler than me.
Doubt it, but I'll take your word for it. So you're a mom too, right?
Yes.
So what do you want for your kids?
Gee, there's a lot that I want for my kids. But at the end of the day, I hope that I can just give them every opportunity to be a contributing member to their community. I want them to be kind. I want them to walk through life with an incredible amount of graciousness and empathy. And I hope that they vote.
There you go. Vote a lot. Vote twice every time.
As often as they can. I hope that they are an informed member of society and that they walk through life with an incredible amount of kindness.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
So when you walked in here, was there something you wanted to say that we didn't talk about?
Gee, you know, I think that the thing that's most important to me is that the pandemic has officially ended, right? And that was such a challenging time for so many Central Ohio residents, right? And we're now into this new phase where COVID, the residual impact of COVID will still be here, but we're not wearing masks, thankfully, for most of us every single day. But we're now walking into this new phase of how do we connect with others? Mm. How do we stay engaged in what's happening in our community? Because the way that nonprofits function has changed, the way that businesses function, where we meet and gather, where we work, has completely changed. What I'm really excited about with the Columbus Metropolitan Club is that we're entering this next chapter of the organization. And I hope that I can expand this group, this really special organization, to as many individuals as possible. So I'm just excited to be here. I'm excited to talk about civic engagement and how folks can get involved in their community every single day and hopefully, you know, serve as a gathering place and a platform for people who are sincere change agents who want to make Columbus a better, brighter, more inclusive, diverse, bold, beautiful, happy, cheerful, awesome community to live in.
Bold, beautiful. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming in here and talking to us. I really appreciate it. It's
been
great.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Told you Sophia has some exciting plans. There are some really great CMC discussions coming up. Find out more on ColumbusMetroClub.org. The Then What Happened podcast was written and hosted by me, Amelia Robinson, and produced by Patrick Flaherty and Scott Kirk. The show's artwork is by TL Creates of Columbus. See you later, alligators. Bye-bye.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.